Hello, this is the podcast for October 11, and it was our class number 13. And we started the section on non-physical injuries as a limitation to liability. Remember, all along we're talking about these things into context of duty. Duty limits liability. Duty is not an expansive concept. It's a limitation concept. And in order to pass, it's the preliminary hurdle in our elements required for a successful cause of action for negligence. And we've seen all along, looking at duty as exploring limitations such as duty of the landowner, duty to for criminal activities on your property, governmental entities that we just finished. Now we're looking at duty, the duty requirement as a limitation on the type of harm that you're responsible for. And these are non-physical harms. And it's important to remember that if you're dealing with a physical injury, your broken leg, anything that accompanies that physical injury is you're able to recover for it if there's liability for that physical injury. Any recovering losses such as your emotional distress accompanying the physical injury, any economic losses accompanying the physical injury, those are all recoverable as part of your damages, but they depend on the underlying physical injury. Now we're looking at injuries that are in the non-physical category, not accompanying a physical injury, standalone non-physical injuries, not dependent on an underlying tort that has a physical injury to it. So emotional distress is the first thing we're talking about as a standalone physical injury. At the end of this, we'll talk about pure economic loss. I mean, that the economic loss is your only injury. And remember, physical injuries are injuries to your person or your property. So an automobile accident, that where your car is injured, that's a physical injury. Of course, you're not going to have any emotional distress along with that. That's not the kind of injury that comes along with it, but there'll certainly be economic losses. That's what your car damage is an economic loss. But now all we're talking about here is where the economic loss stands alone is in a business transaction, or the emotional distress stands alone. And for emotional distress, there are two types of it, direct, indirect. Direct emotional distress, duty to you directly, for harm to you directly, as opposed to indirect emotional distress. The negligence was aimed towards a third party, but you suffered emotional distress because of it. So direct is negligence is aimed towards you. Indirect negligence is aimed towards the third party, but by witnessing that negligence, you've suffered emotional distress. So as we said in class, courts don't like these cases. This was a historical discrimination bias against emotional distress cases. Understandably, they're hard to value. They are subjective, not objective. There's sort of a whiff of woosiness about them. Courts don't like that. This is a very new tort, and the cases that we read were all within the last 40 years of recognizing this as a tort, and particularly for negligent infliction of emotional distress. Courts recognized intentional infliction quite some time ago, but negligent infliction of emotional distress, a new tort. And as we saw in our first case, courts did not want to divorce emotional distress from physicality. It took them a long time to divorce emotional distress cases from a physicality or some kind of impact. In fact, impact was required up until very recently. So we see our first case, Falzone. Here the wife is in the car. The husband's outside the car. The car is hit. The wife is now bringing an action. Although she was not hit, the wife is bringing an action for the fear of her own physical injury. And up until this time, New Jersey had required there to be some impact, and she had no impact. New Jersey opens the door, even though Ward, the case that had come before it, New Jersey opens the door to a fear based on fear alone, emotional distress case where there was no impact. Why? They said, well, you know, we don't have to worry about the floodgates. Other jurisdictions have opened this door too, and they haven't been bombarded with cases. There aren't that many cases, standalone emotional distress. It won't overwhelm us. It's okay for tort law to make changes like this. It's an incremental change. The law can't be stuck. You know, tort law as opposed to contracts or property doesn't depend on planning. Whether the law requires impact or not, it's not going to change the behavior. Not going to change anybody's behavior. And we made it, the New Jersey says they made exceptions to no impact to provide for recovery without an impact. So we might as well keep on going. So Falzone changes the impact requirement and allows for an opening of the door to emotional distress standing alone. Fear alone is enough. But it still wants to hold down, keep the limit of potential defendants, the limit of potential plaintiffs to a foreseeable one, foreseeable amount of potential plaintiffs, not the unlimited world of plaintiffs. So they have very strong requirements. Zone of danger is the most important one. It has to be a real fear, reasonable fear, based on the fact that you are in a zone of danger. That's how the court limits the potential number of plaintiffs. So we see that zone of danger in and of itself is an important requirement. Then we moved over to look at Buckley. And Buckley here is the use of Federal Employees Liability Act, which still required an impact. And this was a fear of getting the injury in the future. As opposed to couldn't use a Falzone type requirement because he didn't fear that it wasn't fear of his immediate harm. That was Falzone. The harm had to be immediate. Here it was fear of getting the asbestosis in the future. Certainly he was in the zone of danger. He was surrounded by asbestos. And he tried to use the impact as impact of the asbestos particles falling on him. And the court said, no, the impact has to be second. It has to be something other than what you fear of getting in the future. It has to be something other than what you fear of getting in the future. And the court here decides, no, the impact has to be separate from what you actually fear. Because here the impact, what he really was, is he was exposed to asbestos, and he was afraid of getting asbestosis. Exposure and impact were not the same, this court says. Giving you another indication of how seriously the courts want to limit potential litigants. Of course, they also are showed their bias against these kind of fear of future injury, these phobia cases. And as we said before, phobia cases, the courts keep a very tight lid on them. They don't want unlimited liability to go on for an unlimited time. So in a phobia case, there's frequently, if they allow them, they have a window. You know, you can't be afraid forever. Give you a year. If the ultimate injury hasn't manifested itself by that time, then then the recovery can be stopped. Remember here in Buckley, it wasn't that he was worried that he was going to, that there was an increased risk of him getting this injury, because the risk was very small. And when we talk about causation, we will talk that there's a risk, you know, you can sue for an increased risk. But here the risk was very, very, very small. He was suing for his fear of getting this in the future, a phobia. And courts are quite leery of these kinds of cases. Very reluctant to allow recovery. Then we looked over at an unusual kind of case for direct emotional distress, and two lines of cases revolving around the death of a close family member, where courts allow recovery based not on fear, but based on very understandable and foreseeable emotional distress that revolves around negligent mishandling of a close family member's corpse and negligent information about a close family member's death. And we looked at the Gammon case, which was, you know, a gruesome sort of situation. And the court says, well, there's not, you know, it wasn't based on fear necessarily. It was based on the quite understandable emotion upon being involved in the having a negligent mishandling of the close family member's corpse. So Gammon goes outside the fear realm for direct and focuses right in on the foreseeability that there will be a very understandable recovery on when you're exposed to close family members' death and a mishandling of their corpse. For the negligent information about the death of a close family member, we saw in my Bob Hope hypo that they need there has to be, just not putting it out over the airways, there has to be some contact between the negligent defendant and the plaintiff. A telegraph, a letter sent, a phone call. There has to be some contact between there. And again, the court wants to allow for these. The foreseeability, the understandability is very, they're very aware of it, but they also don't want to open this to an unlimited amount of plaintiffs just because they've taken away all of these other limiting factors like zone of danger. They're just allowing this as the emotional distress standing alone. So still, though, very closely limiting it to the family members under both types of torts. So next class, we're moving along. We're making it even more remote from the underlying negligence by having this so-called indirect emotional negligent infliction of emotional distress, bystander emotional distress. And we'll see that when we've gone farther away from the underlying negligence, the requirements become even more strict. Why? Because we've removed the injury even further from the negligent action, and we want to keep it in a foreseeable realm of plaintiffs. We're not looking, the court doesn't want to get into an individual plaintiff by plaintiff look to see if your emotional distress is real and sincere. So they have very strict rules governing the recovery, rules that are designed to weed out all but the most viable cases. So next class we'll start with poor TV Jaffe and look at the cases involving this bystander recovery, so-called bystander emotional distress.